This is RSBB Update, episode 465, recorded May 16th, 2014. Legacy appears. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBN The Update, a RuneScape podcast about all things RuneScape and the occasional other things as well. Sometimes way too many things, but I am Shane12088.
And I am your lovable J1, J2, J3.
It's such a good name, isn't it?
Sure. I have actually met J2, J3, J4, but that was a long time ago.
Oh, really? What is the person?
I don't know. He was running through. I was like, "Sup, dude?" I was like, "You stole my name." Technically, I'm a higher level and much older than you, so you stole mine. He's like, I asked him when he started playing. A couple of years ago, I said, "I started when RSC was the best thing ever."
Well, I guess there's the introduction on your name, so that's always nice to know, because I don't think we've ever had a question about that before and where that came from.
Yeah, we have.
We have? Oh, okay.
Long time ago, though, but you'll have to dig through like 500 episodes, or close to that.
Yeah,
close to 500 episodes, aren't we, Shane?
Yeah, getting there. So this week we have a seemingly minor content update in comparison to the bigger scheme of things that have been going on this week. So let's begin with the Return to Ashdale and Choose Your Path update. Now, everyone will remember a couple weeks ago, we had the quest on Ashdale, in which was basically a novice quest teaching people how to boss fight and how to get around RuneScape, and a test on Jagex's part as to a new format of quest that involves using the environment rather than actual dialogue to tell you where you're going. So this week you get to go back there, and it's a pretty small update, considering.
It's designed for free to play, so I wasn't expecting anything miraculous.
Yeah, that is true. And, I mean, I think it's always good to give little updates like this, especially ones that can, increase the interest in game of free-to-play players and maybe bring them into the fold of becoming members and, you know, just enjoying the full breadth of the game that everyone has. So, and that's what this week attempts to do. That's a very good way of putting it. This week allows you to refight the boss from the end of that quest, and in doing so, free-to-play players will get one black pearl per week, and members will get two, and these black pearls are essentially the same as a large prismatic lamp, so it's a nice source of bonus XP. You get to do some combat once a week, and that's pretty much all there is to it.
You know what?
What's that?
I just realized all the Krakens are female.
Because
if you think about it, yeah, the tentacle thingy at the end, the squid.
Okay.
They must be female, because obviously they're laying eggs before we kill them, and then they're laying eggs and eggs, and then we're killing the offspring every week. Think about it.
Okay, that makes sense. And does this relate into anything that what Earth was calling them, Cthulhu, or whatever the heck that is?
Cthulhu? It rhymes with Kazuzu, which was a Futurama monster.
And I mean that is not what the NPC is called, but regardless, that is what he called it because of the tentacles and whatnot. The only question I guess I have for this update is: do we already have enough bonus XP floating around, especially those of us who get three treasure hunter keys a day? And I think it's widely accepted that the most common treasure hunter reward is a prismatic lamp or some sort of prismatic mm-hmm. fallen star. And then, of course, bonus XP. So is bonus XP already too plentiful to be giving this out here?
I think for most people, it probably is. Let me take a look at my, I have a lot of bonus and a little bit of everything. But, you know, when I'm looking at this, remember, this is really designed for free-to-play. They're probably going to get roughly, 1,500 extra bonus experience a week?
Well,
you know, for us, that's really nothing. But for them, it could be a lot. It's a lot.
But remember, this is the same as a large prismatic fallen star. And this, of course, scales to your level. And there's nothing saying that free-to-play can't have skills in the 70s, which would still be a good amount of bonus XP. So...
It's only 70 and above?
No. It's every level. I mean, okay. Like, let's just say, for example, you're level 30. You'll get 2,200, give or take. Level 50, 5,200. Mm. Level 80, around 19K. And level 99, around 41,000, give or take. So, I mean, this is a lot of bonus XP to be given out. And I think I remember looking at some numbers or something somewhere a while back, and the average level in RuneScape of most skills is around level 65. So that is roughly 10,000 bonus XP, and double that if you're a member. Now, everybody gets one Treasure Hunter key a day, and everybody gets two who is a member. So I'm just basically wondering, are we giving away too much bonus XP here? Because remember, you and I come from a time where bonus XP didn't exist. And the only bonus XPs we got were for the bonus XP weekends. Mm-hmm. So, I mean...
Bro, we got lamps. Lots of lamps.
Yeah. And, I mean, just in general, it doesn't feel as though bonus XP is something that should be handed out freely, you know? Since... Like, mm-hmm. looking back at the bonus XP weekends and whatnot, it just doesn't feel right. I mean, it's nice to have bonus XP. Right now, I have enough bonus XP that I can get to 97 summoning and not need to worry about doing half of it, because I have enough bonus XP to effectively go the entire way. So.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think for now, what's happening is, remember, a lot of people are going to go for 120 cape. And, you know, they're probably going to dump most of that into the 120, forward 120. I don't know about you, Shane, but I don't want to catch fish basic, you know, for real, all the way to 120 fishing. That is not going to happen. That will completely melt my brain on the way there. There's only so much YouTube and videos in the world that can keep me entertained as I'm going for 120 fishing.
Yeah, so...
It ain't gonna happen.
So basically you're saying the more bonus XP we can get, the better for those of us who want to make a move for 120.
Well, I'm just saying this. For both, for the two sides of the spectrum, on the lower end, you have people who, you know, who need it because they're trying to level up faster and they're doing all this stuff to get a little extra experience. You have the other end who I'm going for 120, so anything I can do to shave some time off is good for me. And for people like in the middle, well, dump it into summoning or construction and save yourself a couple million dollars.
Yeah, I mean, but like, I completely agree with you that it's nice to be doing that and everything. But at the end of the day, I just feel like it's devaluing the odd bonus XP weekends or double XP weekends now that we'll end up having. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I just think that, you know, maybe we need to step back a bit and control how much bonus XP is coming out.
Okay.
So that's just my take on it.
Well, you know, those who don't want the bonus experience, they'll turn it into gold. Those that need it will use it. And if you don't like the spins, you probably won't use it anyway.
All right.
Like, we do have a lot of experience coming in, but I think for as a whole, it's helping out, helping people get what they want instead of, you know, shelling out and spending the time to do it.
Alrighty. And I will just say in closing that the boss fight is pretty much the same as when we were in the quest. So, I mean, one or two pieces of food, maybe, no prayer, relatively simple to do at high level combat. So, it definitely fits
aim
in
for
with
the
what
eyes.
You're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Aim for the eyes. Got it.
Alrighty. I believe that's it for the return to Ashdale. Next up, just some pretty small updates this week in terms of high scores titles and titles for those who are maxed or completionists. It basically, if you have taken first in one of the seasonal high scores, there is now a title where you can have the title The Supreme. So let's say you get to, I don't know, maybe the most kill the imps, you'll get the Supreme. And also the top 100 in future seasonal high scores will have access to the high scores reward title. So basically what this is, it's splitting it up in a way so that more people have access to it. And the person who got first still has the title, but it's actually a gilded version of the title.
Okay, cool.
And then, of course, maxed and completionist titles, so I think those are fairly obvious.
Yes. What do you think of these three new titles, Shane?
You know, I think it's something that, you know, Jagex was ultimately going to do at some point, and it just basically drives a bit more interest to the seasonal high scores, maybe, if you are really in love with the seasonal high score that's currently active. If not, I don't think it's going to change your mind if you're going to compete in it. I know I haven't competed in any seasonal high scores yet because none have really suited what I do in RS, and I think I've highlighted before that the seasonal high score, or maybe high score table I'm waiting for most, is the high scores by nations. I want to see where I rank among all Canadians in terms of farming.
All Canadians.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I'm hoping for. And I mean, these titles don't affect me, but I guess the top 100 is nice as well as the new gilded version of it.
I'm only waiting for only one title.
What's that?
You know what it is.
Doctor?
I'm not a doctor yet.
Engineer?
It's... no, my lord.
Oh, right.
I want my lord.
Okay. So that's it for the main content update, and now I guess we're headed into the thing that everybody's been waiting for quite some time.
What, pictures of the Elf City?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so Jagex just released a little scrapbook that you can take a look at. It's basically how they created the City of the Elves throughout the past couple months, and you can kind of take a look. They're going to break it up into a couple parts to kind of show you a little bit of here and there. I like the little design document. It may look, if you were to hold this as a book, it'll look like a pretty good scrapbook.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one thing that they said, is these design documents are going to look pretty much like what they use internally. So I would imagine that's why they do that, and they actually, you know, print it out on high-quality paper and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be really nice. I like the only picture that they have in here is the tower. It's like the first screenshot of the tower when it was in the alpha stage, using model. And I know, looking at this, Shane, I was like, it looks like something you would see in RuneScape Classic, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, it says that they prototype it using existing elements in game. And I think this picture we're looking at here is the Wizard's Tower, if I look correctly. Or no. I don't know what this is.
I think that's the screenshot of the prototype version of the Tower of Voices. So that's what it is. And there's a lodestone in the middle. So I'm probably going to use that teleporting to Elven Lands.
Yeah, and I mean, I might as well take this opportunity to mention this right now. We did a RSBMB update supplemental this week talking about this design document in Folt. We talked for a good 13 or 14 minutes with 101Duck1 about this, and you can find it on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBMBstaff. Basically, this Elven City's, particularly the Tower of Voices that we're seeing today, is going to be accessible by Lodestone, Foot, Spirit Tree, Gnome Glider, Fairy Ring, and Crystal Teleport. That's pretty much every transportation method that exists in game. And I mean, it just, yeah, okay, I can, we talked about this and we can understand most of these, in particular. And I mean, it kind of goes without saying these days that you're going to be able to access anywhere in RuneScape relatively quickly, which I have mixed feelings about, but that's aside from the point here. Mm-hmm. But lodestones should not exist in the Elven Lands because they were created after the fact.
Well, maybe we'll bring magicians over to bring it over there.
Well, I mean, if it's installed post access, maybe, but
I think what they're trying to do is make this like a little new mini hub for people.
Exactly.
If you look at what's in it, it's going to be banks and grand exchange booths. It's going to be smaller than Varrock, but it's trying to make another trade center. There's a permanent bonfire, which is very interesting. I think that's a little OP.
Well, I mean, you can just throw logs into it, and there's fire-making XP, there's cooking XP, there's a nice way of, boosting your life points a bit. So,
and there's a chronicle point, too, for cashing in stuff.
Yeah, that'll be good.
There's
a
solo mon. Literally,
yes.
I think what's going to...
That was another point of contention with many people pertaining to this, is that, it doesn't make sense for RuneScape's microtransaction guy to be there now, does it? Because there's two reasons for this. First things first, he doesn't exist anywhere lore-wise in the game, and he already exists in Varrock. And that brings up the question, how is he going to be in two places at once? And the second thing is, you see these adverts whenever you log into the game. You see these adverts whenever you go to the website. So it's not like you don't know who Solomon is and you don't know how to get to the store. So that's what people have been having issues with this with. And, I mean, it's a fair issue given, I mean, the Elven Land should be pure and whatnot, right? So.
Ooh, interesting.
What's piqued your interest?
Looks like we're the portals in over there, teleportation hub with four portals. One is for player owned house, which you can go to the Elven Land for 1 million gold. There's one for sinkholes and dungeoneering. Dungeoneering and sinkhole would be nice. Clan Citadel is a portal and a player owned ports. So literally it ends up being a one stop shop. The only issue I'm having is, how are they going to make this add up with the lore? Unless they're going to do some crazy thing where Elven spies have been everywhere, where they're trying to invade, but you stopped us, and therefore, here's all the places they were going to go anyway.
Yeah. And, I mean, I guess, like you said, it'll come down to lore and seeing where this all fits in with the quest and then the subsequent update, because this city's actually going to be released in batches of two. So, I mean, I guess you could have some sort of thing in the quest, and then you discover it in the quest, and then some time passes, and then over this time passing, people go in, and maybe a lodestone is built, a more modern lodestone, maybe, and that rectifies the lodestone issue. But, yeah, you're right. And you got to say, where are these portals coming from and everything like that. But I'm sure that will be addressed. And even if it's not, I think that's relatively minor, since they're just providing basic services to the players, and the core content of the Elven City is going to be based around the clans that inhabit it, what their skill focuses are, what they stand for, and more importantly, what happened in that quest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll be fine on that regard.
Well, anyway, we should let people read it over. There's one about the Shattered Hearts, which is going to be will be interesting. Let them take a look at it, read it over, and be just as surprised as we were, hopefully.
Yeah, and I mean, the crystal farming tree is going to be nice as well, because it's going to behave just like a crystal tree in terms of the ones we can already cut down in the real world. And also, there's going to be some high-level herb lore ingredients from it as well.
Oh, you know what I'm hoping for?
What?
You know what I'm hoping for? I'm hoping that we unlock some secrets of our power. Think about it, Shane. We're going to a place we're supposed to be very magical and secretive and everything else, full of magic and wonder. Certainly the elves know something about Guthix that can help us out. They were followers of him.
Maybe.
Think about it. Maybe we'll do a little hero thing again, where we gather all the great heroes of RuneScape on a final battle. And then at the very end, we say, y'all suck. I can do this on my own.
All right. Well, as you said, we'll let everyone read up on the design document. And there's going to be more of these coming in through each week, every Wednesday. So we'll probably talk more about each one. The next ones are going to be focusing on the Elven clans, if I remember correctly. And if you want to hear more, kind of a detailed overview of what's in this document and what 101 Duck thinks about this, just head on over and listen to watch the supplemental, rather. Link is in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com.
Okay, then. Okay. Next up, we have the polling updates. And there's nothing in the Dragonstone one. There's nothing over there, but there are something for Diamond and Ruby. Diamond is an update for a non-combat update later in the year. Right there, currently, make more runes valuable is ahead at 38%, followed by skilling bosses, construction update, and a mini game spotlight.
Yeah, so this is what they constitute as a skill update. Which one did you choose?
Honestly, I chose the mini game spotlight.
Okay, why? What do you think that's going to do for you?
For me, probably not much, but I think it would be a good way to introduce other people into it, like Soul Wars, Pest Control, and all the other ones, especially since you get experience for fighting in PvP.
So you think that maybe this might allow people to have a better understanding of minigames that exist and maybe revitalize some of them?
Yes, Soul War. I should go back. I'll go to Soul Wars this weekend, do a little bit and see how it is, and I'll give you an update next week. But I'm looking, with the double points this week and the bonus and experience for killing people again, that's a lot. That's good. It's going to be very interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, that was something I was actually wanting to test PvP-wise, to see how much XP you'd get for killing someone of comparable level, and see if that'd be a viable way to train if you're doing Soul Wars and whatnot.
I wonder if badges... I don't remember if badges use up your adrenaline. But in a way, for me, it's really a way to use up some of my... my summoning, like beast, my minotaurs or whatnot. Wouldn't mind using them up for a while. Made a whole bunch training them. Might as well use them up.
I voted for the construction update.
I thought about that one, but In my heart, I kind of felt that the rune one would make it because it's a great way for people to make money.
Yeah, and I mean, the construction update is something, I think, the reason I chose it, because construction hasn't seen any meaningful additions since the menagerie room. And that was a long time ago. And even then, once you build your house and you get it the way you want it set up, you have no incentive left to train the skill, because most of the products that you get get from the house, aside from teleport tablets, are relatively useless to you once your house is done. So hopefully this will make the construction skill itself more useful if it was to be picked, but it's not looking like that, seeing as that's 23% right now. And I hope that there's still a larger construction update in the works later on.
Okay.
Okay, then. Skilling boss. That would be interesting because, I mean, every boss right now is combat-based. And what's to say, I mean, you could set up some sort of thieving trap or maybe some sort of chemical explosion or something using Herblore with some very corrosive herbs and reactants. Who knows?
In a way, I kind of feel like that might be like Bounty Hunter. Not Bounty Hunter, the penis thing. What's that one called again? By Barbarian Outpost.
Barbarian Assault.
There you go. Remember, that's very, not everything over there is combat related. There's traps and food and all that kind of stuff.
You're right.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay. And then, of course, make runes valuable. That is what everybody chose for this one, I think, because people want an easy way to make more money, and runes, as they are right now, are just used for magic spells. And I saw this poll, and I really did not think that making runes valuable was a good idea, and here's why.
People leveling up will take forever.
Yeah, and yes, we can use this as a way of, you know, revitalizing altar rune crafting and whatnot, because we have the rune span for power training rune crafting now. But if you make runes more valuable and you make it so that they're worth more, because that's what I take this as, is the runes are going to be worth more because you're going to want to use them for higher level things, and therefore runecraft your own or run runes. That is going to be disastrous for the magic combat type. Because what do high-level magic spells rely on primarily? Fire runes, earth runes, what? Air runes, and water runes as the elemental. And yes, at the higher level, blood runes and whatnot. So if you're basically saying that you're going to be making these runes valuable to a point where you can make money with them in large amounts, I think casting magic is going to become more expensive if this is the case, providing, you know, this activity relies on being able to purchase runes from the market rather than, you know, just running your own runes and being excluded and insulated from the current runes market and magic market in general. So I'm a little bit worried about this and what it's going to be doing to the magic economy for casting spells, because if the prices of runes go up, people might take this as a cue to turn away from the magic skill. Unless, of course, we're just talking about runes that aren't used right now, like the soul rune primarily, law rune, cosmic rune, that sort of thing.
We haven't used death very much, have we?
Yeah, death runes are pretty much now allocated to the ancient spellbook, so. And, I mean, this goes to something that people have been saying as well, is why do teleports still exist when you can get everywhere through a lodestone, fairy ring, spirit tree, or gnome glider? Like, why do we use conventional teleports?
Because sometimes it's still faster than waiting the animation.
Well, yeah, of course it's faster. It's just people don't use them because the other options are more convenient.
Yeah, because we have after a bank pin.
Yeah.
They should really. I think they should have a pouch with us.
Yeah, rune pouch would be good. Rune pouch would be good, seeing as we already keep runes on death. So, I mean,
you can cast it like 50 times or something.
Yeah, something like that, or even just make it like the money pouch. You know, it doesn't need to be that complicated. But
we I guess you have to withdraw it out in order to cast magic or something like that.
Yeah, or just
my thought.
Or just make it like the surge boxes in Dungeoneering. But, I mean, this option just worries me that people are thinking about their own personal pocketbooks rather than maybe is the teleport to Camelot or Varrock via the spellbook going to become super expensive from this? Is Firewave going to become expensive from this as well? Are we going to be going to a point in which mages need to make their own runes in order to secure livelihoods if runes are too expensive? And if that's the case, what do we have to say to the rangers and the melee people as well? Well, we can't say anything to the melee people because they don't need to purchase ammunition. And the range people, well, arrows are cheap. Bolts are cheap. Level 80, the Royal Crossbow, those bolts are super cheap. So once again, the core problem I have with that option is that what's this going to do to the economy? So I hope my fears are just being overstated right now and everything will turn out fine, but it's a legitimate thing to worry about.
Okay. Okay, let's see. All right, the next part of the poll, the Ruby one, is going to be task for the reward set for Elvenland. And the top three is supposed to be part of the reward. So right now we have Bountiful Fruit Trees, Cheaper Crystal Recharge, Dark Beast Buff, Elf Land Teleports, Hunter Success Improvement, More Crystal Charges, and Trap Immunity. Or turn to crystal, God knows why.
And currently winning are the Elfland teleports at 30%, Dark Beast buffs at 19%, and Hunter Success Improvements at 13%.
You know what? I bet you most people who voted for the Elfland teleports didn't read a little scrapbook that we had with the basic central hub in Elvenland.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to have one teleport that nobody's going to use again. Yeah. Which one did you vote for?
I voted for the fruit trees option, of course.
Oh, my God.
What?
No, it's not you. Stupid RuneScape spammers are back.
Oh, dear.
And in greater numbers. Of course I do. Okay, so what's the other thing? I voted for the trap improvement.
Oh, okay.
You know, trap immunity, because Lord knows we know where the traps are, but sometimes you just misclick and it just sucks. So it would be nice to know, like, hey, I know it's there. I don't need to go through this again every single time just to get through. I should just be able to walk right through and be like, you remember the traps and disabled it. If you really think about it, Shane, if there's a wire trap right in front of you, wouldn't you, I don't know, grab your shears, cut it, and, you know,
yeah,
and go on by?
Because, you know, I can't count how many times I have misclicked on that wire trap that you're talking about, because it's so thin, you know? And, like, you misclick it and you walk right through and you're poisoned. And, oh, okay, it's not going to hurt
you, know,
but
what?
Still, it's kind of annoying.
I actually almost died once with that one.
Oh, really?
I almost died once. But it was long, long time ago when the quest just first came out back
okay.
in RuneScape Classic. I was trying to get into Elvenland to do something. Can't remember what I was doing. I think I was
that
do some exploration
RuneScape
thing
Classic,
in
by
there.
The way.
Oh, well, I guess RuneScape 2. Anyway, I was there and I was... I was trying to click on the wire so you can walk through by misclicking and click on the other side. So now I go back, try to spam click to go back, but I've already crossed it. Well, now I crossed it, and I spam clicking back, so I go back. So I go my miles forward and try to walk back, backward. However, I'm now on the other side. I already got hit, but now my computer's telling me I'm going to go back on the other side. So I get hit again. And I'm kind of, being the 14-year-old, I'm panicking a little bit as I'm going back and forth until finally I said, stop clicking. Just get hit. I literally had, for like 10 experience HP left. And luckily, I had food.
Yeah. Those traps are really something. Back in the olden days.
And, back then, they could kill you. They hurt. Yeah.
And back in the olden days when Regicide came out and Pika was doing the quest, the first host of this show, I basically said I'd go with him to show him the way through the traps and everything. And I was running, and I knew where all the traps were ahead of time, of course. But the thing is, if the one person in front goes over it, the other person's going to run through it. So he managed to fall through a couple of leaf traps and whatnot. So
you stop?
I don't know. I just kept running and I wanted to see what would happen. It was rather amusing.
You're mean. Anyway, top three are Elven Land Teleport Hunt, Dark Beast Buff, and all semis have a Hunter Success and Trap Immunity.
Yeah, and I mean,
I really do hope they put the Trap Immunity. Hunter is nice, but the Hunter one is nice, but, let us be able to walk through Elven Land faster.
And I want to know why people choose the teleport option, because
they didn't read the scrapbook.
I was under the impression that we have enough teleports in RuneScape as it is. And, as it is, you can get everywhere so quick. So the thing is, the Elven Lands are supposed to be a high-level thing, and we already have tons of ways to get to the city, but if we want to get to different points within the Elven Forest itself,
mm-hmm.
shouldn't we just, walk through the forest if that's what people want, going back to how RuneScape used to be?
Well, one little thing I'm thinking of is when there is a penguin in the Elven Land. I think most people want to have a teleport, so I kind of know, take this teleport and walk east, take this teleport and walk north, take this teleport and walk west. That's what I'm kind of thinking of. And you also get the people who can't even do the quest, didn't read the scrapbook, and now they want us, they want to teleport just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be very useful.
You're right. I wonder how many people who voted for that option, the teleport option, didn't read the design brief pertaining to that there will actually be teleports into the city itself. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I would really like to know what making runes more valuable means as a whole, just to kind of ease my fears about that. But if anybody knows out there what this could be, just let me know. I'd be happy to hear about that option more in depth.
And do your ports. All right.
So next up is the Community Chronicle. This week, something that sounds pretty good. It is essentially a little song that has been put together by one of the community members in relation to the elves. It's called Nature's Serenade. And of course, the idea behind it is it's an elven-themed music track, and I think it sounds pretty good. It's even got lyrics with it, so I'll just play a little bit of it right now.
Mm-hmm. Loud.
So that sounds pretty elven to me. What do you think?
They need to speak Elvish.
What does that mean?
Sing Elvish.
What?
Well, you never watched Lord of the Rings, so you'll never know.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Also, in this week's community roundup, there's a video guide to Elder Divination mentioning of a new RuneScape service that's been set up. It's called Scape.tips. Essentially, what it is or looks like is a support service where you can just enter in a RuneScape-related question and you apparently get an answer very quickly by a live human being. I haven't tested it out yet, but it could prove very promising for answering those quick RuneScape questions for other people and new players to the game. Be interesting to see what would happen if Jagex set something up like this.
Go.
And also some artwork, Rabbit wearing a thieving cape, and a very impressive drawing of Zaros. What do you think of the Rabbit thieving cape?
Whew, rabbit thieving cape. Man, that looks weird.
I guess if the rabbit was stealing things, it would make sense.
Nah. You know what? Go for it. I think it should be green.
What?
I think it should be green.
What would
camouflage?
Be green? Oh, okay.
The cape.
I see. Alrighty. Well, that's it for the community roundup. Also, this week, something interesting has happened, and Jagex has previewed the Legacy combat system for the first time today in a whole multitude of live streams. Main ones this week did deal with Legacy mode coming from Jagex himself. So, did you have a chance to have a look at these?
No, I did not. You have two of them? Two links in this one? Or did you mess
up? Yeah, it says invalid link. I don't know why. That's weird.
You click on it. If you click... Oh, no.
There
it's
we go. It's
working.
It's fixed.
I guess you just fixed it.
But basically, Legacy is looking to be shaping up pretty good. A whole variety of people were streaming today at Jagex, and there's also going to be some stuff this weekend, culminating with a stream by Mod Dean on Sunday. So, Legacy is coming along, and I think that's what we ought to take from this. And as with all other changes to the combat system, I just have a general warning out there for everybody who might have watched the stream and might, you know, have got the wrong impression from it. This is a very early preview of what Legacy will look like. It's the first that the public has seen of it. And with that being said, there are still going to be changes from it. So I know this was brought up on the forums a bit, but in general, there were a couple comments thrown around on the forums that people didn't like the way Legacy looked, or they felt that it wasn't accomplishing what it was supposed to for various reasons. So I just got to say that let's not be overcritical of Legacy combat until we actually get to try it in our own hands. Because if we're critiquing from a video, that's nice, but it's not the same as critiquing it once we've actually played the thing. And who knows, it might actually perform better than it looked to in this video. So I just want to tell everybody to hold off their criticism of this system until it actually arrives.
Okay. Let's see. So, yeah. So, take a look at Legacy. For Treasure Hunter, we got the new protein spitting bars that you can use in replace of regular bars. Go check it out. We have the road trip mini game event this weekend. So, lots of mini games now give doubled experience for this weekend. So, give them a try before they run out. Those include Castle Wars, gold +1 gold ticket per game, double points in Stealing Creation, Pest Control or Conquest, double zeal from Solo Wars, And bosses killed in Dominion Tower counts as two for the purpose of the rewards to unlock. Then double produce points for Livid Farm. For the rest of May, all port forages return 30% extra trade goods or resources, and ports offer 25 voyages a day instead of 15.
Oh.
But you still use only 6 anyway.
I got one more mission to go before I can complete that big one and get the 50 plate from it.
50 plate?
Oh. Yeah, from that joint mission between the whaler, the biologist, and the convict, or whoever it is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I got one mission left to go, so 14 days. Hopefully I'll be able to make those people appear and complete the second mission in that, and then finally the third one. Because if I can do that, I can apply the trait and also those little add-ons that you can put on the ship. And, ooh, that would be pretty good, I think. You'd probably, what, an extra 45% plate from that? It would be very nice if I could complete that by then. Fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm.
What I need for this is I need adventurer rerolls. That's what I need.
Put your little... totem poles as, what is it, extra chance of random events.
Yeah, I could set one of those up for that. I think I've already got them set up for the special voyage to get those guys to appear, because that is pretty much all I'm focusing on right now until it's time to focus on something else. But for anybody wondering, the mission I am talking about is the Huyuji three-part series with the biologist, convict, and missionary. I need to do concerted effort and then the defiance of Huyuji at the end for 50 plate. So hopefully I can get those done by the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
How's your road trip stamping book coming?
I think I still have, I don't know, thanks for reminding me, I should take a look. Still quite a few to get done, since I couldn't get them stamped anyway.
I know I completed mine this past week, and I don't know, do you think these tasks are too easy this time around?
Nah, I think they're doing the whole, let's not make this so hard that people don't even want to do it.
Yeah, and I think that's generally what the consensus was after Super September, is that the idea was good, but just needed to be maybe a tad simpler. So I think they accomplished that here. There's going to be people who say that this was too easy this time around, right? But
when they're appealing to the masses.
I know, and I mean, that's what I'm thinking. People ultimately do want to be able to do these challenges and be successful with them. And in doing that, the stamping session helps, and making sure there's only 20 rather than the full month worth is nice as well.
Yeah, you can get stamped, which is good. It cuts down a good chunk of it, too.
Yep. And also, for what it's worth, anybody who hasn't gone to a stamping session, they are much faster now than they were in the first couple days. So there's no reason if you see the alert.
They basically do an AoE spell and hit everything in the area.
Yep. Alrighty. And that pretty much wraps up this week's RS updates. I'll just say that you can have a look at BTS Video 105 for the Dungeoneering update that will be out in 2 weeks. So it seems we're slightly ahead of ourselves in terms of BTS videos. But we'll talk more about Dungeoneering when it's actually released, because I know you're actually looking forward to those.
Oh, God, yes. Next week, isn't it?
No, 2 weeks from now. We'll be talking about that.
Oh, even better. That's when I have my day off. Yes.
Alrighty. Well, we're going to move on to questions right now. We got two of them this week. Would you like the first one, or should I take the first one?
Yeah, you take the first one.
Alrighty, this one is from the RR Man. OMG, have you guys ever done Wilderness Warbands? It's crazy good XP, perhaps too good. I got nearly 200,000 Herblore experience for 15 minutes of work with my old buddy Sorensen57. Do you think this is a bit OP? Also, is anyone else coming to Pest Control this weekend? I haven't played it for so long, but with double points, it will probably be worth a visit. I remember playing it for 6 hours straight in an internet cafe just after its release. Me and a couple of my real-life friends had a damn fun night back before we knew the mystic beverage known as alcohol. Okay. And back in the day, that mini-game was OP as something. And there we go. As I came full circle, question complete. Peace out from the RR man.
Deuced. Okay. I never did Wilderness Warbands.
Yeah, neither did I. Because primarily of the PvP element. And I've never been much of a PvPer in RuneScape. So it wasn't something I wanted to get into. And I mean, there's risk associated with it. So I didn't want to take that risk. But, you know, you can get the Wand of Treachery. And that was a good amount of funds you can get from that back then. And I mean, Herblore XP as well, that's great. So I mean, assuming the XP scales with level, I'm gonna say that that's not too overpowered, because it is a wilderness mini game that has excuse me, that has risk associated with it. So I wouldn't say it's too bad. And as it is right now, Herblore is not a skill where you can rake in easy amounts of XP as you can do in, say, mining or fishing or rune spanning or thieving even. So I wouldn't say it's too bad, because, you know, you do need to pay for Herblore XP. So a little bit of free Herblore XP is not a problem in my view.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pest Control.
Pest Control. Yeah, we did Pest Control. We all did.
Oh, yeah. Back in the olden days, that's how I got 100 combat.
I don't know what I got from Pest Control. It was good. Oh, no. I was doing... Not smithing. What was I doing? I was doing range. No, not... Yeah, I was training range with my crystal bow. I just wanted to level it up a bit more. It was cool.
Yeah, and I mean, Pest Control used to be... There used to be such an operation associated with Pest Control. There were Pest Control clans and whatnot to, you know, get the waves done as fast as you can in order to get the most amount of points in an hour. And then one summer there was a nerf to Pest Control that split it up into three different level categories and, you know, made you need to do more work if you were higher level than everything. And after that,
well, you got more rewards for it too.
Yeah, you did. And I mean, I didn't see it as a nerf. Pest Control was already too generous in my view, and it was required for game balance. There's a special, you know, line between being overpowered, balanced, and underpowered. So that moved it closer to that. But I mainly stopped doing it because I needed to do Slayer, because Slayer just seemed more profitable at the time, in that, you know, you could get 85 Slayer and, you know, maybe come away with an Abyssal Whip or something like that. So that's why I moved to Slayer instead of Pest Control. But I'd say check it out this weekend. Maybe that might be something interesting to do, to check out for me to get level 99 strength, because I am only probably, I think, around 140,000 XP away, and Pest Control is basically a RuneScape institution in terms of, you know, giving experience and whatnot. So it's definitely one of the older things in here. Let's see, what am I at? Yeah, I'm 174 XP away, so who knows, maybe I'll end up doing that this weekend. We'll see if anything else interesting pops up, because well,
in Soul Wars, that's been cool.
Yeah, are you gonna do Soul Wars or...
Nah, I'm contemplating between Dominion Tower and Livid Farm.
Yeah.
I think I want to try and maybe get revenge just for when I go dungeoneering and whatnot, just to make me do a little bit more damage.
What about stealing creation? get bonus XP for crafting, smithing, or construction.
I really don't really give a hoot about that as much.
Yeah, and I mean, this kind of goes to show that, like we were saying earlier, there's already so much bonus XP in the game. Why do we need more, especially when stealing creation gives this bonus XP by default? So maybe that had a role to play in the downfall of stealing creation. I don't know. All right. Thank you, Iron Man.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, I forgot they don't do that. Next up, we have a question from Majik. Dear host, now that I was finally able to get 77 to 90 Hunter using only Divine Box Traps, I'm a little sick of skilling, not because this is how RS is now. I still get a lot of opponent experience. I have no idea what skill to put it in. Because I have 99 Prayer, Herbalore, Summoning, and Smithing, most of the expensive skills are out. I've been putting it into crafting, but I want to know what are your suggestions? Where do you put your bonus XP in? Also, about Divine Location, you guys usually go and try to do each one each day? Thanks, Magic. I try to do each one each day, but usually I'm so busy I don't do it. So when I do get a chance to do it, and remember, I do it. I go to World 2, go to Birthrub, and just do a couple, and then go.
Okay. You know, I used to be like that in regards to many things in game, but I stopped because it's like you said, if you're playing the game and you're, you know, getting things that act like a chore and whatnot, and you feel like you have to do them every day, you're not having fun anymore. So I basically only do the dailies that I want to do and find fun just because, I mean, it just makes my gameplay better. And I know I'm missing out on XP here, but if I'm having more fun with the game, that's more important to me. But to answer the question, my bonus experience currently goes into summoning, because summoning is a skill that I've wanted to get 99 in some time, and it's an expensive skill. Yeah.
Okay.
So I do summoning.
I dumped a whole bunch into prayer, then realized the ectofungus doesn't work. I was like, oh man. So that sucked major balls.
Yeah, doubles don't stack like that.
At least mentioned 97 prayer with all of it. So now I have like 394,126 points bonus XP for prayer that I had to figure out how to use it up.
You could go kill frost dragons with your bone crusher.
Thought about it, but I'll make more money if I just sell the damn thing.
This is true.
Actually, so I've never really fought frost dragons.
Herblore, summoning, and smithing. I'd say then go for agility, construction, divination, or farming. Because farming is expensive too if you want to buy the seeds. So, I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't put it in farming, but there are better options. I'd say construction or divination in your case then, based on what you just mentioned, seeing as Herblore, Prayer, and Summoning are already out of the way. Crafting as well, if you don't like crafting, because that's another expensive one. It's a skill I forget about most of the time. It's not as prominent as it should be, I find. Slayer, if you don't like doing combat, it's always an option. Runecrafting, super RC XP, could get all the way to 99. Dungeoneering, I don't know, lots of options, I think. I'd say just put it in the lowest skill that you want to raise up that is expensive or you find troublesome to raise.
Okay.
That's the way
I usually dump it in summoning if there's nothing else to do.
Yeah. But he already has 99, so the next best would be construction in that case, I think. So. Alrighty, thank you, Magic One. If you guys want to send questions in like these guys did, just go to the forums at rsbb.com/forums early on in the week, and you'll see a globally announced topic where you can post your questions. Or if you want to be more adventurous, you can send audio questions in, which are always fun. Those go to questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a voicemail on Skype. The username is rsbnbupdate, and we'll get your question on the show. And thirdly and last, we have a Google Voice number for those who live in the U.S. That number would be 571-572-2632, or better remembered as 571-57-BNB. Alrighty, that's it for questions. So, next up is Tech News, the part of the show where everybody learns about the world going on outside of RuneScape. So, this week, the FCC is becoming a little bit pro-consumer, I guess you could say, or pro-business, maybe?
Pro-bribery.
That's a better way of putting it. I will agree with that. So the FCC voted this week.
We actually agree on this. Fascinating.
Yes, to approve today, 3-2, to improve the creation of the so-called Internet Fast Lane. And in a way, this kind of lets the air out of the sails of net neutrality. Because the idea behind net neutrality, for anybody who is not aware, is that a packet, whether it comes from my server or Netflix's server or a Comcast-affiliated server, should be treated equally and all have the same priority and be delivered at the same speed. That is what net neutrality says. And that is the way most people online, a good portion of them, do think that that is the way the internet should behave itself. So with this new proposal, it's kind of a counter blow to that definition of net neutrality, because it would allow companies to pay for priority access to the internet service providers. So this means that, for example, services like Netflix and Hulu could pay Comcast, AT&T, which Comcast has already done, and you get direct access to the consumers. And yes, it appears faster, but at the end of the day,
There's no reason why that should be the case.
Yes, because if the internet was behaving as it was initially set up, this wouldn't be a problem. So basically what we're seeing is a prioritization of packets on the internet. Now, at the end of the day, you'd think that this isn't a problem because there's plenty of room on the internet for packets to flow. And if Netflix gets prioritized over your email or your RuneScape gaming or your YouTube session, you're not going to care. It's going to find another way. But the idea is that these ISPs are getting paid, Comcast and AT&T primarily right now, or shortly will be, get paid by Netflix in order to have this priority service. So Netflix or Comcast and AT&T can pull more money in from these companies and give their service a higher priority. Now, like I was saying, that sounds perfectly fine on the top. It's good for win-win for consumers. But there was a recent study that was done by Level 3, one of the large main backbone internet service providers in the United States, who has many links to internet services all around the world through their huge pipes and whatnot. A study was done that was showing that the routers of American-based ISPs are at high levels of saturation in terms of the packet load. And what this means is that ordinarily you won't feel any problem if the load is manageable. But if the load is high, there are packets that are going to be dropped. And guess whose packets are being dropped if these peering agreements between Netflix and Comcast become into effect? It's those who are not watching Netflix, those who are just watching something standard on YouTube, something that isn't subsidized by one of the companies. So the ISPs, in a nutshell, can use this to, in a way, bring more profit in from these companies.
Basically for no real value.
Exactly.
No real exchange.
Exactly. They're providing the one service to the customers at a good level, but other packets might be dropped. So this is where the thing comes in, as this isn't a good thing, because, you know, we think we have huge amounts of bandwidth available, but at the end of the day, American ISPs aren't upgrading their equipment to handle more traffic. They would rather have a lower network quality and pull more money in from both you and the companies in order to create the appearance of having a better internet connection. And this is what net neutrality is ultimately all about. I'll find the thing about the overloaded routers and whatnot. But, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a problem for everybody, regardless if you're an American or not, because all packets could potentially go through one of these congested routing points.
Okay. And, you know, there are actually plenty of ways you can actually talk to the FCC and complain and say how bad this is and everything else. President Obama isn't really doing much of anything. He basically just said, screw it, he can't do jack. So basically, is, you know, as I was reading one little thing, some people called to complain about the FCC's controversy that they actually told people go to their main website and complain. And I actually did that last week. And I do encourage more people to do it. Do complain. Do write. Do something instead of just sitting here and go, it's not going to work.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, it's another reason, in my view, as to why net neutrality isn't exactly a good thing. I mean, like, yes, this sounds good at the end of the day, but if this is going to mean there's going to be a central government authority overseeing more regulations and whatnot, that's something that needs to be looked at as to, you know, should the government be looking into this? It's a standard small government thing, and they're kind of at odds as to, you know, whether or not net neutrality is a good thing. Net neutrality isn't a good thing in terms of large government, but on the same side of the coin, you do need something to enforce this. And, I mean, a high-level world body probably isn't the best way to do it either when you think about it. So, I mean, you like, all one needs to do is look at the United States Congress and see where all their funding comes in. Where does the FCC's funding come in? It's a government organization. You know, who controls these guys and whatnot? And you see that there is a certain amount of money being thrown around. And that is one of the fundamental problems in American politics, is that there is no limit on lobbying and how much money can be thrown at things like that.
I wrote my little 2 cents, and, well, let's see if people actually listen, eh?
Yeah, and I mean,
okay,
it's just such a difficult thing. Is net neutrality good? Is net neutrality bad? We need a different solution at this point, I think, seeing as the FCC ultimately has said that, okay, this is net neutrality is fine, but here's a different way of doing it. So maybe there's some other way that I'm not thinking of currently that doesn't involve the government and doesn't involve regulation.
Help us, Google Fiber. You are our only hope.
Yeah, there. That would be a good option. Google Fiber, yeah.
Yes. I actually took a look on their website the other day, and it's like, I can get like 8 times the speed for the same price.
Yeah, and I mean, Google is a rich company as it is, and their revenue comes from
So are
advertising
Comcast.
on the web and everything. And Google itself is an internet-based company. They're not necessarily a media distribution company as all the ISPs are. So that is something that could help. Another thing that I just thought of recently is what if internet was treated like a utility in the same way water lines and everything are treated?
You want us to pay by the data?
Well, I mean, you could pay for a certain amount, a certain bucket full at the end.
We already kind of do. That's what Comcast and them already do. You're
Yeah.
limited to 2,500 gigabytes, 250 gigabytes of data per month or something.
Yeah, and I
It's like,
mean, if you treated
hey.
it as a utility, it would basically mean it comes under the same thing where with utilities like water and electricity, there's no discrimination as to where it goes first. So that would probably be the best way. But once again, government regulation, too much. I don't know. It's up for debate. But anyways, next piece of tech news, Google Glass. Is now on
I
sale
thought we
for
were the
anybody in the
observation one.
US.
I thought we were doing the second one.
No. That was an extra link about the internet middleman.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Google Glass, it's on sale, $1,500. It is a beta. It's Android powered, so if you're an Android user and you live in the US, and you have some money to throw around, this might be an interesting little science experiment.
No, not for me. And I'll you and you know, I kind of made this argument before. It's kind of like the same thing with the gimmick of 3D TV. I already wear glasses. I don't need to open another pair and have become six eyes.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, like I said before, I think this is an early piece of technology, so the form factor of glasses will probably eventually improve. So we're seeing into
And
the form of glasses right now, but I would say that we're probably not that far off, less than 20 years, of being able to wear special contact lenses that can just do it transparently.
you could, but the thing issue with that, you gotta think about privacy. How are you gonna detect that stuff? It's gonna be really hard. And do you really want something like that in your eyeball? Never know. People have done stranger things to their eyeball and their body. But really thing is, I already wear glasses. I don't need another pair in front of it. Yes, there's huge benefits for doing this everywhere across the board. But the question is, how come, for people like me, you gotta make prescription glasses with it, and that's not gonna be cheap. And if you
Yeah.
lose it, you are triple screwed. And if it breaks, you are mega screwed.
And that point you bring up, that's also why I'm interested in the contact lens solution, because it's just much more invisible. You don't need to, worry about whether or not you're going to throw another pair of glasses on top of it. And ultimately, it just takes us one step further to closer computer immersion and limiting the barrier between the human being and the computer, which is, I think, something that does need to be done moving forward with all forms of
Why don't you
future
just
computing.
implant a chip into your brain and connect yourself to the internet?
Oh yeah, I'd like to do that. That is something I would do if I could.
Shane, you'll be the perfect prototype. What's going on in Shane's head? Nothing. Cricket, 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 cricket.
Yeah, and it would show that I really don't know what all those things are that people talk about, and they wonder what's going on sometimes.
Okay.
All right. And last piece of tech news.
Xbox does cut, but no connect.
Yeah, $399 for no Kinect. Apparently, the reasoning behind this is to better compete with the PS4. So, I mean, I don't know. I think the Kinect is such an integral part of the Xbox One that you really should have the Kinect with it. And I don't see why Microsoft is doing this.
Who knows? I don't know. I haven't touched a console in years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We're not console gamers, but consoles do have a certain appealing sense to them that you just put something in and you play a game, and that's the ultimate in terms of just ease of use. In it goes, and you get the game right away, and there's nothing to fuss about, no settings, nothing like that. And I really like that idea with consoles. It's just, I don't know, it's, like you said, it's something about them, and we are not console gamers, you and I.
Well, like I said before, for me, it's just makes no difference to me. After I went and got the GameCube and I played with it, it was fun and everything. But then all of a sudden, the Wii was coming out, or at that time it was called Revolution, Wii. And suddenly it was like, yeah. And suddenly I noticed that, I bought like 3 games and paid, you know, $250 for. Well, actually, my dad paid for $250 for the game for the system. I was like, this kind of sucks. So I was like, there's no point in buying it again.
Yeah, and I mean, if I was a developer for Kinect or Xbox applications, I'd be rather upset at this. Because when the Xbox One was first announced, Microsoft said that every Xbox One user will have a Kinect. And if you're writing applications for the Kinect, you want these to become as ubiquitous as possible with your users. So if you were an Xbox developer, I think you'd feel badly about this. Just because you were promised this and now it's gone. And Microsoft is essentially changing what their system is through this. I mean, I'm going to say it. And I think the best thing, the best solution would have just been to reduce the price of the Kinect bundle by $100. And then you have more people purchasing, and ultimately everybody is going to have a Kinect, and you expose them to this new interface. So I think that would have been the better option. And yes, we know Xbox is already profitable, and this would be minor compared to how long it took the Xbox 360 to gain profitability after it was launched. So,
and you know, Shane, you and I both know every company that sells a console takes a loss at it in the first place, because you know you're not mass producing them yet. You're making only so many, and you really make the money back from the games.
Yeah.
And I guess it's
games, accessories, and services now.
But you know, as I remember, only company, or one of the only company that was making money off their console for a good long time was Nintendo, where their Wii was. Every time they sold a Wii, they made $20. Well, you count how many times they made the Wii, that's a lot of money.
Yep. Alrighty, what have we got in this skill of the month? Anything interesting happening?
Let me take a look. Skill of the month for May. And, everybody flatlined.
Huh.
Yeah. So, Blatherskite basically is the only one that has much of anything. We have 15 million experience game, while everyone else is roughly 1 million, give or take. And that's for Slayer. So someone have been really busy with the cannonballs.
Oh, you think they're training it through ranged cannon?
And co-op.
Oh, okay. Well, there is half the month left, so who knows? This one might be over, but 14 million Slayer XP and change to catch up would be a tall feat for anybody in this competition, anybody in the top five to do, so we'll just have to wait and see. Hopefully it won't be too boring for the rest of the month. Alrighty. Okay. Next up, we have the Informer Writers applications. We're looking for a couple of writers for RSB and being former to write about RuneScape-related activities and whatnot. So if you're interested in duplicating or rather coming up with your own stuff of what the Informer writers do, you can just head on over to the forums, and there's actually a topic there where you can find the Spring 2014 Informer applications. Just click on RSBNB Informer, and you'll find them there. Basically, what the job is you get 750 words to tell us about something in RuneScape, and then you send that in, and if we like it, we'll ask you to come back and write monthly for us, and you get all the perks and benefits of being an Informer writer. So definitely have a look. If you like writing and you like RuneScape, this is probably the thing for you. And you can find out more, just visit update.rsmb.com and look for the Spring 2014 Informer Applications link. Okay, well, I will tell everybody, including you, what the Community Ambassador rank is. This is something we brought in earlier this week, actually tail end of last week. Basically, Community Ambassador is a new service that we've set up with Earth, and he is going to be handling outreach to other communities, other clans, that sort of thing. And he'll also be running some events for us on RuneScape as well. So basically, he is going to be heading up the community effort in terms of other clans, events, and the wider RuneScape community. So it should definitely be very interesting, because I know there's some things that are already in place. For example, there is an alliance with a clan called Clan Quest, in which we've set up with them and a close relationship. And we'll be doing some joint stuff, maybe podcast appearances for them, us at some of their clan events, and vice versa. So definitely something to look forward to. So that is what Community Ambassador is.
Okay, you talked about this the other day, but I wasn't paying attention.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. Alrighty, so achievements of the week. Who have we got? Let's see what we got. First up is Poison Nova with 99 construction on the 14th.
Touchpad Pro got 99 summoning on May 14th.
Ooh. He also got 99 defense on the 12th, and Lord Jared got 99 constitution on the 9th. So, good work, everyone. Enjoy those new 99s.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
okay.
I understand you have a pick of the week for us.
Yes, this may be good to really see trade around the world. Found this a while back. There we go. And it's from MIT. And it basically gives a little breakdown of what we trade with other countries, what is it, and how much do we get from other people as well. I figured this would be kind of cool for people who might be doing a little business and want to really do a little analyzing of all this stuff. It's a neat little thing.
Yeah, and I mean, you can select pretty much every country on this. I know I was looking at the at the one for Canada earlier in particular, because that's just something very interesting to see. And unsurprisingly, Canada's biggest trading partner is, of course, the United States. 71.6% of our exports and 69% of our imports, or 59% of our imports, rather, come from the U.S. So we are pretty tied with the U.S., and that's why when one economy goes down, the other one goes. Mainly when the U.S. go, we follow.
We actually export a lot of cars, a lot of cars.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one thing that it used to be thought that that was the main group of the country, but in a whole, it's, you know, it's still a powerful industry.
And let's see, I can't remember where we sent it to again. Let me see if we can.
I mean,
destination.
Yeah, it's very nicely done, and I mean, even when you throw up, say, I don't know, let's just see what Russia does, since they're always in the news these days. So let's have a look at Russian imports. Russian import is pretty much from Germany and China. So you can see why there's always a reluctance to impose sanctions on Germany there. So definitely makes sense in that regard. And same thing just for Russian exports, mainly to China, Germany. It's well diversified. So that's a very nice find indeed, and you can even see what all the different types are. Like, of course, Russia exports crude petroleum, whereas on the other hand, Russia imports cars. So
and yeah, you know, if you don't like it, you can also change it to text only, so you can probably use it like to copy stuff around. Although everything is, you know, a couple years old, most recent was only 2010, it's still fairly recent. You can download this stuff too, maybe use this as a way to do your presentations or whatnot.
Yeah.
Savvy?
Yeah, that's good. I'm just trying to see if we can find...
I wonder what Vietnam sells. What do they what do they export?
Is North Korea on here?
Whoa.
Yeah, here we go. Let's see. North Korean imports. The vast majority, 83% from China. Yep.
You think?
Yep. And same thing. Exports to China, so... All right, very good pick indeed.
And let me see. Huh. Vietnam most traded export is footwear.
That makes sense.
Why?
Well, that's just where most of footwear comes from, is those small Asian countries like that.
East Asia?
Yeah.
Actually, they're going to, depending on how Intel did, I always looked it up, but I know they built... We're planning to build a little factory there to build Intel chips there in Vietnam.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Alrighty, what have you been up to this week?
I've been tired and working and busy, and I'm losing my brain, man.
Well, that's really unfortunate.
Yes, so I'm almost done with school, with classes. I'm almost done with school, finally, again. And... when I'm done, I plan to eat so much chicken. I'm going to eat a lot of fried chicken, Shane.
All right. Anything in RS? Any developments?
Did port. Still trying to find my magical captains again. I'm kind of semi-getting ready for Dungeoneering again. For Dungeoneering weekend. I did a little bit. I managed to get 92 thieving. Which is cool, which is nice, over the weekend from the thieving weekend. And I actually got the scepter, the Pharaoh scepter, but now I need to get the scepter of the gods, which that won't take forever. And that's more or less it. Yeah, that's about it. Nothing crazy yet.
All right.
And
that's
my
interesting.
Goal of getting 91 and everything is still in place.
That's good. That's one thing I always tell people to do is, you know, set small goals, because you set big ones, you might get a little bit distracted with them. And if you set small goals, like one level at a time, especially when you're high level like that, it makes things a lot easier. Anyways, as for me this week, you know, just did the ports, divination primarily, some farming runs. Still not completely sold if I'll take divination on as an X99, but there's reasons for and against doing it. Well, I'm level 95 currently, closing in on 96, so it's almost decision time. I'll make a decision once I get 96. I'm only around 300,000 experience away.
Okay.
All right. I believe that's it for RS Boomby Update, and we will see you guys next week. Thank you for listening, and remember that if you like what you hear, you can subscribe on iTunes. That's always a good thing to do.
All right, take care. Peace out. Have a fine, scapian week.